Different time.
Different place.
Different pitch.
Something is going to happen. Guests, Wolfgang Richter, Cornelius Schmalz-Jakobsen. Translation, Patrick Charles. A program by Dani Gahl and Achim Lengerer. Assistance and research, Andreas von Stosch and Eva Storms. English voices, Jeff Burrell and Dulcie Smart. Sound engineer, Soha Boni.
Der Wirtschaft darin bestand, dass es nicht genug Arbeitskräfte gibt. Und von 1980 an wurden Verträge mit einigen Ländern geschlossen, um also Menschen zum Arbeiten in die DDR zu holen. Das war vor allem in Vietnam, das war Angola, Mosambik, Kuba, Algerien zum Teil.
The GDR authorities believe that one of the major problems facing the economy was the lack of sufficient labor. From 1980 onwards, treaties were signed with various countries in order to bring workers to the GDR. This involved mostly Vietnam, Angola, Mozambique, Cuba, and to a degree Algeria. There were treaties with these countries which stipulated that their citizens would come to work in the GDR. The initial period laid out in the contracts was 4 years, and this was later increased to 5. It was also laid out that a portion of the wages earned by these workers would be directly transferred from the GDR to the countries of origin. I believe it was about 12 to 15%. And the rest was paid out to the workers, because, of course, they had to live here somehow. They typically lived in residential accommodations. The women were not allowed to have children, because then they wouldn't have been able to work. That means that if they did become pregnant, they would have to either end the contract and go home or abort the pregnancy, because, after all, they were meant to be here to work. And at the beginning, they received 3 months of German lessons, which is, of course, just a ludicrously short time for a Vietnamese person with a completely different language. It was not at all intended that they should learn to speak good German. There was a group leader and an interpreter. And anyway, they were just supposed to do their work in these huge companies, work which was very intensive, but which never required any specific language skills or particular training. Then came 1989, 1990. And the question arose, what are we supposed to do with these people? They weren't needed anymore in the companies, because either the companies themselves had folded or large numbers of jobs were lost. So a lot of people became unemployed, which had never happened in the GDR. And of course, the first ones to be fired were always the contractors.
When the wall broke down, people streamed in to Germany. And that was something. And at the same time, the Balkans started. So there came people from the Balkans, not to be compared what we had in 2015 from Syria and other countries. Yes, and that was the moment when a change of our basic law was discussed. Because there was a sentence in it, who comes to our border and asks for asylum should be accepted, of course, then with a procedure. But so people could come to our border and say asylum, which they really did.
But there was also people, and this was the case here in Rostock, who'd been here since 82. Their lives were based here because they'd come here age 20 or so, and now they were around 30. The majority of their conscious lives had played out here. Friendships and relationships had grown here, and the people wanted to stay. Despite this, there was a regulation in 1993 which said, no, everyone had to leave. There was an initial breakthrough at the conference of the minister presidents of the federal states in 1993. That was because this political campaign to allow the people the chance to stay, which had been organized by political parties, the trade unions, and by the church, had finally had some effect amongst the decision makers at the top. So there was the chance to stay depending on specific criteria. In 1996, the final decision was made to provide the right of residence and also the opportunity for the people to bring their families over from the countries of origin. Let's say that of the 100,000 people, there were maybe around 15,000 who could then remain in the Federal Republic of Germany.
Last night, in a special broadcast in Rostock, there were a camera team from a show called Kennzeichen D. And they spoke to Vietnamese people in a house that was set alight. These journalists tried for 2 hours to ring the police, and they couldn't get through to them. And so they started to get out of the house by themselves, the journalists together with the Vietnamese refugees. This is the journalist talking. They're saying that neo-Nazis have tried to get stronger with the action against the refugees. First, they started fighting against the police people that were protecting the house. And then the neo-Nazis are actually trying to storm the house, which has journalists and refugees inside the house. These journalists tried for 2 hours to ring the police, and they couldn't get through to them. And so they started to get out of the house by themselves, the journalists together with the Vietnamese refugees. This is the journalist talking. They're saying that neo-Nazis have tried to get stronger with the action against the refugees. First, they started fighting against the police people who were protecting the house. And then the camera team and neo-Nazis trying to storm the house. They spoke to the house. He's been on this boat for 2 hours to when the police couldn't get through.
So the crucial point was the moment in which people who wanted to register for asylum were no longer allowed into the house and were told that it was because the house was full. You have to wait. Come back tomorrow. This happened the first time shortly before Easter in 1992. Some Vietnamese people called me and said, do you know what's going on there? There are people waiting outside and they're not able to get in. And so I called the department head in the Ministry of the Interior. There was a sign hanging there. Asylum applications will only be possible again after Easter. And the department head said to me, no, Mr. Richter, I don't believe that. Wait a moment, I'll call you right back. And he came back in about a quarter of an hour. You're right, he said, I've ordered that this sign be removed immediately, and of course we have to accept refugees over Easter. So that was that. But this situation arose again and again, that people had to wait 1 or 2 days before they could get into the house. I'll do it one more time. So that was that. But the situation arose again and again, that people had to wait 1 or 2 days before they could get into the house to be assigned to their places of residence in the districts. And let's say that from about July onwards, it was pretty much a constant state of affairs. People waiting like this just to apply for asylum.
Yes, and then the law was changed in a strange way. I have to say that today. I thought, as this was the only part of our basic law that dealt with other people than Germans, it was generous, and I hated to cut that out of our basic law. I thought you could do it in a different way by just changing a procedure, which I don't know whether it would have worked. So, but there was a majority from all parties.
In the Sonnenblumen house, there are living 100 Vietnamese people. The DDR has them taken to Germany as Vertragsarbeiter, but with the local Monday, 25th of August, and they drive suddenly to the Sonnenblumenhaus, 21st of August. Asylum seekers camp.
They couldn't get through.
Monday,
so
24th of August, MPD member.
This is the journalist talking.
They drive suddenly to the Sonnenblumenhaus.
They're saying that neo-Nazis have tried to get stronger revenge against the refugees. First, they started fighting the broadcast.
The police people
were still protecting the house. And then
camera team,
the neo-Nazis are actually trying to storm the house.
They spoke to Vietnamese people in the house,
journalists and refugees on the satellite.
The central
these journalists tried
asylum
for 2 hours to ring the police. They couldn't get through to them. So they started
nächste Station, Rostock, hol seinen Platz, Ausstieg in Fahrtrichtung links.
So it was in the midst of this situation that I went to see the mayor. But I also went to the administration's meetings. Every Monday they had these meetings. Rostock had 10 senators then. Today, there are only three. The delegates were always present during these meetings. And the senators were there as well, because this was a big issue in the town. It was all over the media. The conditions were unacceptable. Unacceptable for the refugees, for the Vietnamese neighbors, and also for German citizens. Unacceptable that people were being treated this way, having to deal with everything life throws at you, including going to the toilet, while having to wait to be allowed into this building. I witnessed a pretty much total failure of politics there, because the state and the local authorities were only trying to push the responsibility off onto one another. The local authorities argued for hours during these meetings with the senators about why the town wasn't responsible, and the state had to find a solution. And the state said, now wait a moment. See, the people inside the house, they're ours because they've applied for asylum. But the people outside, they're homeless. And we, as representatives of the state, are not responsible for homeless people. Local authorities are responsible for the homeless. And so in all this mindless, senseless back and forth, with all this nonsense about who's responsible and who has to solve what, the conditions just got worse.
Chancellor Kohl and a majority said, we have to change that. This is the main subject. If we change it, it will be quiet again, and we can deal with other things, which in a way was true, but only in a way.
Gets stronger with action against the refugees. First, they started fighting broadcasts.
I had no idea how big it would eventually become, but I was sure that something was going to happen on this Saturday. It was clear to me that I had to be there on Saturday afternoon. My only son had his first day of school in Greifswald on that Saturday, so we had actually planned a family celebration, and I was in Greifswald that morning for my son's introduction to school. My wife at the time was considerate enough to say to me, you have to be in Rostock. And so we came here to Rostock with him at midday. We got on the train to Warnemünde on the Baltic coast, had an ice cream. And every now and again, I'd head over here and have a look to see what's going on, if anything was happening. So when people started gathering in the afternoon, I sent my wife and son back to Greifswald, and of course I stayed. And at first there were discussions going on there. The first representative of the mayor was also there. I had spoken to him on Thursday and Friday to talk about what we were going to do. So he said to me, yes, well, I'll be out there too, because really, how bad is it going to be? He was going to come out there with me, and then we would have to see what was going on, if anything even happened. The discussions just kept on going in a circle. In this tense and heated atmosphere, it was really no longer possible to have a calm and sober discussion. And while we were out behind the building trying to have discussions with these various groups, out in front, people were gathering who were just there to cause trouble and be violent.
These journalists tried for 2 hours to couldn't get through. When the club closed, we met up and so they started to and it was dark, refugees. And then we would hunt the Vietnamese. They were selling cigarettes.
To the Sonnblum house.
They're saying that neo-Nazis had tried to...
And then we took the cigarettes off them.
Action against the refugees.
We would first take the cigarettes off them,
especially against ourselves, or police sell them ourselves. Protecting the house. And then...
We were wearing T-shirts with slogans like Sieg Heil.
The central...
These journalists...
Asylum
for
seekers
2 hours to
and
ring the police
never said anything.
Get through to them. closed, we met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves. Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese. And it was dark refugees. And then we would hunt this is the journalists.
They were selling cigarettes. They drive suddenly to the Sonnenblumen house.
They're saying that neo-Nazis had tried to...
We took the cigarettes over with
action against the refugees.
We would
first take the started fighting broadcast.
The police people were still protecting the house.
And then
camera team
the neo-Nazis are actually trying to storm the house.
They spoke to Vietnamese
people in the house.
Journalists and refugee camps
was set alight.
The central...
These journalists tried
Asylum
for
seekers.
2 hours to ring the police. Never say they couldn't get through.
I went in briefly to see the Vietnamese people in the house. There were 25 police officers there, really badly equipped, wearing their light summer uniforms and shoes and carrying shields that weren't transparent. So if they did provide some protection from stones being thrown at them, then they couldn't see what was going on. And here too, the department head said to me, "No, we're taking this all very, very seriously." But all the mid and higher level strata of the Ministry of the Interior, civil servants from the old federal states in the West, and the entire leadership of the police from the old states, they all headed off for the weekend and weren't present. They didn't take it seriously, like it had been promised. And it was in this situation, late on this Saturday afternoon, that the violence started.
Und dachte so, also jetzt hat die Polizei es endlich im Griff, jetzt ist genug Polizei da. Die beiden Hundertschaften aus Hamburg haben da wirklich für einen entscheidenden Wandel gesorgt im Kräfteverhältnis.
On Monday I was thinking, the police will finally have a grip on it. There will be enough police there now, and the 200-man groups, police from Hamburg have ensured an overwhelming shift in the balance of power. The day was filled up with telephone calls and conversations with the Minister for the Interior, who had by this point returned from his weekend. The mayor was very consciously dressed casually because he was still on holiday. Otherwise, he usually wore a suit. But he came wearing a sweater, and he vanished again during Monday morning because the police had everything under control now, and we as a town had nothing more to do with it. To this day, it's a complete mystery to me how somebody who holds the position of mayor of this town can display so little sense of responsibility for his town in such a precarious situation. Well, anyway, on Monday afternoon, a radio report came out as well. On Monday evening, at around 8:30, I had an appointment with some people from the ZDF, and there was a journalist from Der Spiegel, also down in the foyer. By the time I arrived there were a lot of people gathered there again, and the police were present, but there were still no attacks against the house.
And then there was the fear really strongly that if they come now, they just push us off the roof. We were looking for a flight path to free from the house, not just sit on the roof. I was trying to run down in the house, and I couldn't go much further than 10 meters. I couldn't breathe anymore. I went in and was looking around, but we couldn't find them. It was a horrible situation.
We took the cigarettes off the bench. We would hunt this is the journalist.
We didn't know which room he was in, so some people just thought that's it. We couldn't find
the cigarettes of the action against the refugees.
They just first take the stand in the fighting against broadcast.
The police people of Vostok protecting the house.
And then
camera team,
the Nazis are actually trying to store the house.
They spoke like to Vietnam's
team from the house,
not just sit on the roof. It was set alight.
The central
these journalists tried
Asylum
for
seekers
2 hours to ring the police.
The police never say they couldn't get through to them.
Closed, we met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves.
Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese
Dark refugees.
MPD.
And then we would hunt.
This is the journalist.
They were trying to
suddenly to
run
this
down.
We didn't know what
room
he was in.
They say it's
out of
the
trouble.
Ich hatte am Tag organisiert mit dem Herrn Ting, dass drei Familien bereit waren, dort auch ein Interview zu machen. Und als wir
I had organized the three families who were prepared to give interviews. When we were in the first flat and had set up the gear and were preparing for the interview, I looked out of the window and suddenly saw that there were no more police in sight anywhere near the house and could hear that people were down there chanting and shouting and that the mood was becoming increasingly heated. And then I went back down again to the ground floor to the porter's office because the only telephone in the entire house was there. And from the office, I called the police station in Lütenklein. And in that moment, the violence began. People started throwing stones. People were trying to kick in the window panes of the door to the house, which was locked, in order to get into the house. I told the people in the police station that we needed help, really quickly. We needed a lot of police officers because the house was under attack. And outside, I could see fire, incendiaries. And we needed the fire department. I told the police on the phone. Then I hung up because I didn't want to run into these people down there in the hall, and I went back up to the sixth floor. It was obvious. The police are gone. We can't just sit here twiddling our thumbs and wait to see what these thugs are going to do. We could hear that more and more people had made their way in downstairs, that furniture was being smashed up, that they were breaking glass, throwing firebombs. The house was already on fire downstairs.
Protecting the house,
and then
camera team,
the Nazis are actually
trying to store the house.
They spoke
like
to Vietnamese
people from
the house,
not just sit on the roof. It was set alight.
The central
these journalists tried
Asylum
for
seekers
2 hours to ring the police.
The police never say they couldn't get through to them.
Also haben wir gesagt, das eine ist, uns nach unten zu verbarrikadieren, weil wir wussten ja nicht, wollten die hochkommen, wollten die uns direkt angreifen. Also haben wir den Fahrstuhl blockiert.
We said then that the one thing we had to do was barricade ourselves against the lower floors. We didn't know whether they would try to come up, if they wanted to attack us directly. So we blocked the lift and barricaded the two stairwells. Mr. Ting and some of the other Vietnamese residents tried to look for other ways to somehow get out of there. It was clear we couldn't get out downstairs. The mob was down there. So we could only go up onto the roof. But that was really well protected with a steel door. Mr. Ting and some others then tried to get the door open. He was, well, he still is today, very gifted when it comes to technical things. I was mostly downstairs, and I tried to barricade everything and to see whether or not they were trying to come upstairs. And after about an hour and a half, the door up top was open. And so, yes, for about 2 hours, we were stuck in this house with no police protection at all. About 150 people have escaped over the roof to a staircase down to where some German families lived. From there, it was easier to get over the roof to another stairwell. And then the women first. There were a few small children. Some Vietnamese women who had been pregnant around the end of 1989 had managed to not get sent home after all. They stayed here instead and had their children here. And there were a couple of Vietnamese kids visiting as well. So women and children first. Then the men, one by one, over the roof of this high-rise building into the stairwell, where we could find some kind of safety. And then, after 2 hours, the police returned.
The Christian Democrat Union and the Socialist Democratic Party decided that they would carry on upholding asylum seeker rights. Police never say they couldn't get through to them. We met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves. Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese.
When it was dark, refugees.
NPD.
And then we would hunt this is the journalist.
They were starting to run down.
We didn't know what they were saying. So they say that further than 10 years. That's it. Breathe out of the city. Hell, we took the cigarette off of the action against the refugees. They pushed us out of the rules. Finally, the Democratic Police in Boston protected us. They decided that they would carry on. The neo-Nazis are held inside the school-looking house. They were about to free from the house. They were just sitting
The central
these journalists tried
asylum
for
seekers
2 hours to ring the police. The police never say they couldn't get through to them. We met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves. Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese dark refugees. And then we would hunt this is the journalist. They were starting to run down. We didn't know what was if something would happen today, probably 70% of the population would say, we don't know anything about this, we don't care about it. And that was in the early 90s, not 70%, but 99%.
The central
asylum seekers 2 hours to ring the police. The police never say they couldn't get through to them. We met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves. Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese. It was dark refugees.
NPD.
And then we would hunt this is the journalist.
They were starting to run down.
We didn't know what they were saying. Could they say much further than 10 years? Could they breathe out of the situation? Hell, we took the cigarette off of the action. If something would happen today, they pushed us out of the situation. They could get the police in the hospital to say, we don't know anything. The camera is on. We don't care about it. It's trying to store the house for a fight to the early 90s. Not free from the hospital. Not just sitting inside. It was set alight.
The central
these journalists tried
asylum
for
seekers
2 hours to the police never say they couldn't get through to them. We met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves. Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese dark refugees. And then we would hunt this is the journalist.
Verlag was, well, the Bild-Zeitung was especially terrible because they really haben Stimmung gemacht. And then, I never forget this, this was not Hoyerswerda, this was, I have forgotten which town, but three people died because there was put fire to then Solingen, that was in Solingen, and others were not only traumatized, but verletzt. Yes. And then the Bild-Zeitung, the next day, with big, big block letters, wer hat Sinaip angezündet? Who put fire to this little girl and this little girl in the picture? And I said, you did, because you had a very different kind of writing up. It was a shame.
Together with the Vietnamese. When it was dark, refugees.
Epidem.
And then we would hunt the journalists.
They were trying to run down.
We didn't know how they were saying. They're saying that the further near that point, three journalists were told that they held. We took the discussion that if something would have happened to the journalists, they could have said that they were
But these hate crimes were so shameful and so terrible, and people whom you wouldn't have thought who would have these minds talked about in a way like racists would. But on the other hand, the more that side grew, the more the other side grew. And there were many people who said, this is not our country, we want a peaceful country, and they put candles in their windows. And I think they saved a lot in Germany, among Germans. Like when 2 years ago, the many refugees from Syria came. There it's definitely a split in my country.
The central asylum seekers.
The police never say they couldn't get through to them. Closed, we met up, and so they started to get out of the house by themselves. Friendly journalists together with the Vietnamese. It was dark, refugees.
Epidem.
And then we would hunt. This is the journalists.
The central asylum
for 2 hours. The police never said they couldn't get through to them. Closed, we met up, and so they started to
Persons persecuted on political grounds shall have the right of asylum. That was the only sentence in the basic law of the German Federation, or the Grundgesetz. The events in Rostock changed this. Up until then, the SPD had always resisted any attempts to change the basic law, and in the federal parliament, a 2/3 majority is required to make any alterations to the basic law, which meant that it wouldn't be possible to make any changes without the votes of the SPD. Events in Rostock changed the general feeling within the SPD, though, and after that, there was a majority of members of parliament from the SPD who then, I believe this was made official in early 1993, but after Rostock, there was this movement within the SPD that meant they were ready now to agree to change the basic law in that point in which the right of access to asylum had been so critically limited.
Okay.
There were then three conditions which were then formulated for inclusion in the Basic Law. First, that there was no access to asylum for people who entered Germany via a secure third country. And of course, Germany's only accessible by land via secure third countries. Then there was a list of secure third countries. So then it was no longer possible to enter Germany by land. And there's always this attempt to prove where people have come from, to send them back to where they came from. That was one thing, the secure third countries. Then there was a list of secure countries of origin, with the names of countries about which they said there can't be any politically persecuted persons there, because there isn't any political persecution in these countries. So they have no right to apply for asylum. And if there is any, open brackets, then it'll be dealt with in a kind of summary process, and it'll end in the overwhelming majority of cases with a rejection. And this list of secure countries of origin didn't include, I don't know, the Netherlands, Iceland, or Denmark. No, instead it was Romania and Bulgaria. And those were the two countries the Roma came from to apply for asylum in Germany in 1992. The third condition was about the seaport and airport regulations. Everyone who came to Germany via sea or air and declared that they were seeking asylum could not enter the country, but instead had to stay in the harbor or the airport where they would have to undergo a kind of preliminary examination, determining whether or not they had viable reasons to be seeking asylum. If they could prove this, then they were allowed into the country. If they couldn't, then they were considered to have not yet entered Germany, and they were sent back to where they came from at the expense of the airline company that had brought them here. And so this was how the insulation of access to the asylum-seeking process here in Germany was completed.
Closed, we met up, and so they started to...